Welcome to Middle School Matters podcast number 673, Problems versus Puzzles. We're going to talk about problems versus puzzles. We're going to talk about some stuff for your classroom. We've got jokes for you to use for the beginning of the year. So without further ado, here's the wonderful, the magnanimous, the Mr. Troy Patterson.
All right, welcome back to the show. I am Troy Patterson, and with me is the world's greatest co-show host, Mr. Sean Migger. Hey, Sean.
Well, hello there. How are you?
I am well. It's supposed to be a beautiful day today, and you know, school's starting very soon, so getting ready for some of those activities. I have a question for you, though.
Okay.
What do you feel when you accidentally send out the same Morris code twice?
I don't know.
Remorse.
Okay, I got you. All right. Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
I have a little tip for you, too.
A tip? Okay.
Yes. How do you get a farmer's daughter to fall in love with you?
If I knew that, that would have happened a long time ago. But I don't have that answer.
A tractor.
It didn't work. Right? But I got you. Yes. Yep. Yep. Yeah. Works. Yeah. My dad loved tractors. He did. And so every time we bring it up, my mom, first thing my mom would say is, did we buy it? Just, are we buying another tractor?
Just let me know.
Yeah. Is this what you're really telling me? Yes, you saw a tractor, but did we buy it?
Oh, I just finished a novel about an immortal cat.
You did?
I did. It was impossible to put down.
I got you. I got you.
Little dark humor there for you.
Uh-huh.
I had to register a complaint the other day.
You did?
Yeah, my complimentary hotel breakfast.
Uh-huh.
Did not tell me I looked nice, not even once.
Really?
Mm.
Oh, dear. That's bad.
You know your groups of animals, right?
I've only heard some things.
You know this one. Just okay. A thought. It's only a murder of crows if there's probable cause.
I got you. Yeah, I heard. Yeah. You're right. I heard that one before. Heard.
Let's see here. I did get lucky the other day.
No, you're lucky as your dog, right?
Somebody threw a bottle of omega-3 pills at my head.
Really?
Yeah, luckily my injuries are only superficial.
I got you. I got you. That was slick. I like it.
Oh, and I've also had a little bit of success this year. It's only August, and I've crossed 9 of the 10 things off of my to-do list.
Okay.
I didn't do any of them. I just crossed them off the list.
Hey, that's what a certain department in my district does.
All right. We got a couple of visual jokes for you over at middleschoolmatters.com as well. So you can go over there, check those out, add all of those to your random joke glossary in Moodle so that it is as robust as possible. And then I think that you are really, really, really going to like the Middle School Science Minute this week. Because the wonderful Dave Bidlowski has a section on parent newsletters and some tips on writing them and how often. And one of the things I liked is he also said how long it took to write a good parent newsletter. and kind of how and why, and just a lot of really good information. So here, without further ado, is the wonderful Mr. Dave Bidlowski and the Middle School Science Minute.
Hi, this is Dave Bidlowski of K12Science.net, and this is your K-12 Science Podcast. I was recently reading the July-August 2025 issue of The Science Teacher, a publication of the National Science Teaching Association. And I read the section, Idea Bank, written by Alexander Eden. And he wrote an article entitled, The Power of Newsletters. He created a parent newsletter entitled The Eden Express as a slideshow, typically consisting of 3 to 4 slides. The format for the slideshow was as follows. First was slide 1, and that included a classroom memo, a message summarizing any going on since the last newsletter, reminders, a section containing key reminders such as when students could receive extra help, makeup work policy, and the best way to contact him. The section remained the same in all newsletters as a consistent reminder, and slide 1 also included key dates. This section included any dates relevant to the academic calendar, such as midterm exam dates, holidays, term end dates, etc. Then, slides 2 and 3. These slides were dedicated to special items depending on the time of the year or activities taking place. For example, the edition of the newsletter that preceded midterm exams included a section describing the topics and key aspects pertaining to the exam. This was done to familiarize parents with an important component of their students' overall final grade. Other items included an About Me to familiarize parents with him, study skills, building time management, and student clubs and activity spotlights. Slide 4. This slide, Academic Spotlight, highlighted content that was covered in previous weeks as well as what was coming next. He also encouraged parents to ask their children about concepts discussed in class. He then emailed a shareable link to the slideshow out to families, as well as a PDF file, so that parents could open it in their preferred format. If time permitted, he included a recording going through the slides in English and Spanish to give an additional method of perusing the information. Following the described format on average, it took approximately 30 to 45 minutes to update the newsletter. He sent an updated newsletter about every 3 to 4 weeks based on the activities going on in the classroom. While this frequency sometimes coincided with the end of units, it sometimes did not. This was done purposefully to maintain a consistent routine of communication with parents, anticipating the updated newsletter on the 3 to 4 week rotation. His aim with each edition of the newsletter was to maintain as much consistency as possible while trying to focus on the most relevant topics. In turn, he always prioritized including images of student work, activity examples, as well as any student hot topics that had come up in home discussions. The impact of the parent newsletter on his classroom was almost immediate. With each edition of the newsletter, parents responded via email, expressing their gratitude for providing this information. The newsletter also improved the performance of certain students in the classroom. For example, one student shared with him that their parents always followed up with them regarding the content shared in the academic spotlight section of the newsletter. While the parents expressed genuine curiosity, this also encouraged the student to share what they learned and also reinforce the content in the classroom. Engaging parents and families can be just as meaningful as engaging students. For many new teachers, reaching out to parents can feel daunting, as there is often uncertainty about how families will respond or what to expect. However, tools like parent newsletters can provide a structured, positive way to establish and maintain these connections. By sharing classroom updates and involving families in the learning process, newsletters can help build a sense of community that supports both students and teachers. And this has been your K-12 Science Podcast.
How often do you send out? You're doing parent newsletters still?
Well, our assistant principal said that she'd been doing one, and so to kind of keep the conversation streamlined and also keep them from feeling overwhelmed, we really hadn't done any in a long time. But there's certain things that we talk about, and we're like, oh, we wish the parents really knew about this, you know, what their kids are doing. And so I sat down and I made a template for a newsletter. And then I thought, well, you know, I'll just write the first one and let's see how it goes. And I was on page 7 when I said to myself, this one needs to be like 3 or 4 newsletters. Yeah. And so we're thinking, and by we, I mean me, I'm thinking that I'm going to take and break this into different sections, parts 1, part 2, part 3, right?
Yeah.
But what I'm doing is putting together, you know, the kids can bamboozle parents because the parents are busy and they don't have time to sit down and read about certain things, right? And so my goal at for the very first one was just to introduce the team and the new schedule for the year. And I passed that one out at orientation this week. And I passed that out with Jack Breckmeyer's new pamphlet, which is really, really well done. We'll talk about it later in the show. And of course, Jack did it. So it is really, really well done. Goes without saying. But I want to do one on AI and in particular, you know, things they need to watch out for. And I love, we're just going to go off the rails right here for a minute. I love my subscription to ChatGPT for a couple different reasons. Because I sat down, I was like, I know I took this class at through ISTE and I know a lot of things. And I did the sessions at ISTE and I know a few things. I don't know everything. And I just don't know what I don't know. So I went into ChatGPT and I said, hey, just give me a quick, like, what should parents really know about AI? But the cool thing about it is I could build a library of files first. And I could say, here's some direct things I want you to reference. Then I could set up instructions. And I said, we're only dealing with middle school parents. We're only dealing with middle school kids. And I want you to take it and approach it from such a direction where parents can be protective of their kids. And ChatGPT was like, yeah, sure, I can do that. No problem. You know, it's the useful, I don't want to say useful idiot, but it's the useful assistant. We'll see how that goes. And then I said, now give me some ideas. I could put in newsletters. And it did. And I was like, oh, I didn't even think about that. So, well, all right, let's do this. Give me a bullet point list of things parents can do to support their kid at home. Like, you know, what can they do? And it gave me some great ideas for modeling how to use AI in front of their kid. I was like, oh,
that's good.
Well, that's even better. And then I went to Sora and I said, give me an infographic on this. And Sora did. And Sora makes beautiful infographics. And I'm like, holy cow. I've got 3 or 4 or 5 newsletters right here, but I can take the bullet points and I can turn those into infographics and I could push those out as an information blast.
Right.
And so for the first few weeks of school, I could send one out once a week if I wanted to, or the first week of school, I could send one out once a day, right? And then taper off. But I don't want to get to the point where I'm like sending so many out that the parents go, yeah, just another newsletter from the Cardinal Challengers team. Ignore it.
Yeah, that's the challenge that I've always found. I've done a whole variety of newsletters and getting them read is challenging.
That's why I want to do infographics, yeah.
Yeah, one of the things that I had to move away from was links, like linked to the actual newsletter, like here's your newsletter, because very few people click the links. And a lot of times I'm working with teachers, right? So I'd put this out to teachers and teachers are like, yeah, I was going to read that.
It's true.
Notice the,
100%.
Whatever. So like, it's like, okay. And, you know, I found very, very little, I found great intention, but very little actual going through. So then I started making sure everything was within the news, within the email. So it's like, okay, here it is. And still got mostly the same reaction. I was going to read that. That looked like it was going to be interesting. Okay. Yeah, it was. It had a lot of really good stuff in it. But you know, teachers are overwhelmed. They got a lot going on. And a lot of times the email hits their inbox when they're doing something else. So, you know, unless you have some kind of, I've not been able to solve, nor have I heard of anybody else really solving the issue. There's just a lot of, the hit rate tends to be pretty low.
The English teacher made a good comment. She said to me, you know, nobody's going to read this. And I said to her, yeah, it's just, this is cathartic. I can say I've done it. And then I can also, gives me the right to say, these parents don't read what we, you know, I suppose that's that right too, but that's not healthy. But I did it, right? And there may be one out there who reads it. I will say this too. Jack Birkemeyer's Middle School 101, you know, Help for Parents. I had a bunch of those out for the seventh grade section of the orientation. And I had a number of parents pick it up and stand there and read it while their kid was getting their schedule. Stand there and read it. And then as they were going through, standing in the picture line for pictures for IDs, they stood there and read it. And maybe that's a way to go too, is to go back to hard copies.
Yeah.
A couple of the kids I know, I'm going to have to pin it onto their shirts, but.
Yeah, that makes a difference. And really, I think the biggest part of it is somehow creating a culture of this is valuable and I'll read this. Because there's so much competition, right?
Right.
With newsletters. I mean, I can't tell you how many newsletters I subscribe to, and there's a good number of them that I don't read. I don't have time for this right now. You know, I signed up for it. My intention was good, and it, you know, it was looked interesting. And there's times when I do read it that's like, well, it was interesting and I learned something or I was entertained, but it's hard. You have to somehow create a culture of value and of almost responsibility. There almost has to be a responsible aspect to it. So yeah.
Yeah.
All right. This is the last hurrah of summer. Now, you said you've already had kids come in, so you've met your kids?
Well, I don't know. I've met some kids. I don't know if they're all my kids, right, or which ones are mine. Because they got their class lists, but some of them didn't go upstairs. And then I was manning the sixth grade table, not the seventh grade table. So, now, that being said, I let the sixth grade teachers man the seventh grade table because I thought this would be a great way for the kids to come back, reestablish those connections with those teachers, and by doing so, the school. And making the first day back with new teachers, making it a little less stressful, right, about coming back to school. So I was totally good with that. I did hang out upstairs for a bit of time, and we're requiring the kids to use lockers this year. Kids are going to use lockers. That's not a single kid in the entire building has had to use a locker yet. The sad part is that the eighth graders will learn how to use a locker, and there are no lockers at the high school. So this is a skill they're going to use for 1 year. And
interesting.
And that may be it.
So how did they handle how did you handle coats and backpacks and galoshes?
Yeah, galoshes. They don't wear galoshes.
Kind of thing last year.
Exactly the same way they do in China when you were in China.
Okay.
You wear them to your seat and you sit down, you wear your jacket all day long.
Wow.
So, yeah, I told the kids and I showed the kids pictures of our teachers that, you know, they would post their classrooms online. And I showed them the pictures. I said, see, you're just like those kids in China. You're wearing your jackets. They're wearing their jackets. granted, their jackets all look the same. They're in uniform. You're not. I said, but look at what they're wearing for their daily outfit. It's a tracksuit, right? It's a, you know, track jacket with a t-shirt and track pants and same tennis shoes and probably same socks. But we talked about that, and I really appreciate the fact that our students, our teachers in China post pictures of the classroom so that I can share it with my kids and go, right. You think you have it rough. You know, you think your life has been rough till now. You know, imagine these folks. I saw a post. This is a side note. You and I taught in Beijing. That was correct. It, right? You and I, yes. In Beijing. All right. Yes, you and I in Beijing. I taught in Shizhuang, and there was there are a bunch of the economy in China is not great right now, and so a lot of workers haven't been paid. So they're going in and they're blowing up the factories and blowing up their workplaces. Like we're talking, people haven't been paid in 6 months, but they can't change jobs because they're not allowed to, right?
Yeah.
So they're stuck.
Wow.
And so they're just blowing the factory up. So the government has to give them a different job or find them a different job. And there was a huge one in Shizhuang last week. Like it was captured on like a door cam. And it was the biggest, giantest mushroom cloud. The sound was just, and I was looking at it through video and it was deafening. So, like some of the teachers I worked with, I know their communities are hurting really. And we were working with the communities that were in the poorest sections of town. Mm-hmm. And if they're, you know, they're the ones who are suffering with the downturn in the economy. The Evergrande was finally delisted from the stock exchange, and Evergrande is going to go under here in the next 3 to 6 months. And when it goes down, it's going to take so many people's families' savings. It's going to be gone. So there's a world of hurt coming.
That human impact that we frequently miss out on or doesn't get reported. 'Cause I'm going to guess that the owners will be probably okay. They have other paths of things and that probably, but it's a lot of the smaller investors or the workers that are now out of a job and don't have large reserves to live off of to start with. So
yeah, the owners are the party members. It's just the CCP that owns it, and they won't get, nothing will happen to them because they're CCP. They might disappear for a while, but they'll just relocate to a different part of the country, which is not an option for, you know, the folks and other folks. Yeah. The ones they're going to lose are not the investors, because investors are all here in the West. They could care less about what investors here in the West, because in China, you're not allowed to invest in a company. The only investment you can make is buying a second home, which is what Evergrande sold to a lot of people and Country Garden and a bunch of other companies. And so, yes, they're going to lose out big time because they bought air lots for buildings that will never get built. Or if they do get built, they're built so poorly that tofu drag construction is just going to it crumble and fall apart within a couple of years. So it's like they just threw their money away, but it's the only place where they can sink their money. By the way, Hurricane Aaron is just developed off the coast. I say that because you know somebody named Aaron.
I
just got notified. Yeah.
I think you know somebody named Aaron too.
I know a couple of errands, yeah. But neither one of them are hurricanes. I will say that. Well, okay, my sister, sometimes she's a hurricane. So I expect to be hearing some things. I'm going to get in touch with a couple of folks I know, and I'm going to ask them if they're okay and just check on them. But the folks we teach or we taught, who are teachers, they don't make enough money to do that second house investment because they get paid right below the poverty line. And so they just don't have the disposable income to buy that second house. So I know that they're being thankful that they have a job, right? But if the government right. can't pay for their jobs, then they won't get paid, and then they're going to hurt too. So there you go, folks. You're all cut up on the economy in China. Man, unexpectedly
so. It was kind of depressing there.
Yeah.
So
I have something that is undepressing. Let's go back to the orientation really quick.
So, yeah, so orientation. So kids have picked up their schedules and taken pictures.
Picked up their schedules. The day is done. Pictures. They went to the library and got their Chromebook. Then the day is done, and I went to the office for something. And the one of the 8th grade social studies teachers is there. And she laughs out loud, and she goes, "Oh, Sean," she says, "I got to tell you." She goes, "Some of the 8th graders were talking about you." I said, "Oh?" I said, "What were they saying?" They said, "One of them was telling the other one that this is the summer of this summer Mr. McGurr had a glow up."
Oh,
yes,
he did.
Yeah. So apparently, and now I those of you who are not watching this on video, if you are watching on video, that is a little strange and scary.
That's the problem.
Yeah, I'm going to have to check my settings. I've been growing a beard over the summer since July 4th. I just didn't shave. And I thought it might be fun just to get my ID pictured and my yearbook picture taken with my scruffy hermit beard. Mm-hmm. And it's what I refer to it as. This is my scruffy hermit beard. And normally I shave it off this week sometime. But I kept it on for orientation. And then I kept it on because of this statement. I kept it on for the show today. So Troy can appreciate my glove. Apparently my beard... My beard is the glow up. Yes, Mr. Mirror had a glow up this summer. So,
okay.
But the beard's coming off. So you missed it. If you don't tune into the video part of the show right now, you missed it. So,
which is not public, by the way.
Right. Oh, yeah. That's true too. I did fail to mention that. Yeah. And so, if you're able to see it, we should talk.
You work for Google.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yes. And have access, and we should talk about that too.
So yeah
so yeah, so that was a funny thing. They've come back, and I will talk one more thing too. We've talked about the power of project-based learning on this show, right?
Frequently.
Yeah. And I've talked about it with other teachers, and I got teachers who are I'll talk about it with them, and they're openly resistant to it. They want nothing to do with it, and that's fine. Wow. I can't change that. I'm just being a teacher, right? I'm not trying to do anything else. But the more I work with AI, the more I'm convinced that project-based learning is going to be the way to go. More of it instead of less of it. But I was surprised by the number of parents who, I don't know, coming up to me and asking me about the projects we're doing in my enrichment class, and how can they get their kid into that. I had a parent who called their friend to find me, to ask me about how we could do that for her daughter. I think that's the power of project-based learning and the effect it's having. Parents recognize the learning that the kid is doing, and they're recognizing the motivation that it creates. That motivates me to want to do more, with that. I picked up Jay McTeague's or McTighe's project-based learning book, and I need to sit and devour that. I need to plan out a time. I had a friend in college who would wake up at 5:30, and he would read. That was his dedicated time to read, and he had a book. Didn't matter what it was. He had a book, and that's what he was working on. He was reading, and then finished that. He'd pick up another one, but he had a dedicated time to read before the entire day started. That was it. He was going to read. And that's what I need to do, is sit down and say, here's that time of day. See that 30-minute block? I'm going to read. I'm also reading 3 other books. Excuse me, at the same time. I almost finished with the second one on AI. And then I need to look at McTighe's book and and really look at implementing that. I got a couple of really great project ideas from ChatGPT. And I love the fact that it'll help me synthesize standards into a single common project that'll address all those things. And now I want to like take his book and the ideas in there. And if I could, I'd love to just feed it in as a PDF and say, ChatGPT, this is a reference and we're going to use this, these pieces, and we're not going to use these pieces because, you know, you don't always buy something wholesale. So, or sometimes you're just not ready to try something that is, you know, a little bit beyond your comfort zone. So that's where I'm at with that. That's there you go.
That's excellent. I think that we've seen project-based learning or problem-based learning, which is related but different. We've kind of seen that come and go, right? We've seen peaks and valleys of implementation. It can be difficult to do. It is not something that is frequently super easy, but it can also be super effective. And I think one of the things that always hearken into me is it's not an or. It's not like you need to do traditional or project-based learning. It's more of an and, because you do need to build some of that background knowledge. You do need to build some of that information stuff. So it is really, it's that collection of things and how you do that that's really important.
Someone made a really powerful statement. I don't know that they were thinking it was a powerful statement. It was powerful for me. When they were talking about project-based learning in the math class, they said, how many of your math teachers or you, how many of you give homework problems to do? And, you know, people raised their hands. And he said, now, are you giving problems or are you giving puzzles? Because if it's just math equations to figure out, you're just giving the kids puzzles to solve. He says, if you're giving them real life applications of those mathematical equations, then you're giving them problems to solve. I thought, oh, that's pretty good. I need to think about that. So
that is interesting.
Yeah.
I got to think about that now too. So
maybe stop and think.
Yeah.
I don't want to put that one in.
I have an article later on that we'll talk a little bit about is where it kind of comes into play with this, which is deals a little bit with behavioralism and constructivism. But it was, again, for me, it's the perception that we have to do one or the other. And it's like, no, education involves this complex stew of messiness that helps kids learn. And we frequently try to boil things down into a simplistic strategy or a simplistic answer, and that's not what humans are. So I think that frequently gets lost in the implementation of things. So yeah. All right. Let's see here. We have some things from the social web this week, and I'm actually going to kick it off this time.
You are. Fun fact, just, too.
Yeah, I'm not even going to try to go, oh, Sean, because I know that one did. This is this is from Thomas Fuchs, and this is a fun fact. Approximately 64% of Americans use assistive technology to overcome a disability. So when we're talking about disabilities, you know, a lot of times people say, oh, that's not me. I would never be, you know, whatever. Or why do we have to do this? And it's like, You know, the majority of Americans use assistive technology every day. And Sean, both of us would fit into this category because this is just one type of disability. Yeah. And that's issues with eyesight. So, you know, wearing glasses is something that's completely normalized, but it is assistive technology.
Yep.
Right. Yep. So I think it's just a good, I just read that and I was like, yeah, you know, a lot of times I hear that people think that using assistive technology is something extra, something different. It's more work. It's more this. It's more the other thing. It's like, yeah, it's part of life. It's part of what makes life. And note that lots of people use assistive technology. They get used to it. They figure it out. And we should do some of that as well. So you also might be looking for some tips on using AI as well.
Yes. In particular, John Soash at JR Soash. And I've not had a chance to try this one yet, but I am curious about it because one of the things that I've seen a lot of people talk about when it comes to AI is the ability to integrate a lot of their own stuff mm-hmm. as a research base or a knowledge base for AI to draw from first before going to an outside secondary source. So I guess it's another way to teach primary and secondary sources. But according to John Soash, you type the at symbol in the hashtag Gemini chat or Gemini mm-hmm. chat box to connect to Google services like YouTube. This lets you pull content from other places, a great way to find videos for your next lesson. But you could also do it for like your drive. You could do it for your documents. You could do it for a number of different things. So,
interesting.
I wonder how public that makes it though afterwards. That's, you know, also, so I don't know the answer to that question. National Park Service. I know mm-hmm. this is the favorite part of this section of the show. Is the National Park Service. Keep at least 25 yards from bison at all times and never approach a bison and take a photo. If they want to take a photo with you, they will let you know. Boundaries, not just lines on a map.
I like that.
And another vocab word or term, Susie Dent at Susie Dent. Word of the day is copamate. It's a 16th century word. It's the friend in life who gets you through. So, you know, you've got a copmate somewhere in there. You've got one of those at work. Go find one at work if you don't have one, because they will help you get you through this coming school year.
There you go.
Yep.
Surprising that's a 16th century word. That seems much more modern.
Yeah. Makes you wonder if the, like, it sounds like an Aussie thing, right? You know? They probably still use it, and the rest of us dropped it, and they're like, no, this is a good word. It works. Let's use it. So that's pure speculation on my part, right?
Yeah.
Tons of fun.
All right. Let's keep rolling with you there, Sean.
Yeah. So, let's talk about a resource. I heard this, this morning, as a matter of fact. It's an article online at World Magazine. But it's also they referenced it this week in their weekly news podcast, but they took the whole interview and they posted the whole interview this weekend. Here's a quote from the article and audio. It says, in the last week or so, you may have seen a startling picture of data put together by an analyst for the Financial Times. The graph shows changes in personality traits over the last 8 years. Starkly down are conscientiousness, agreeableness, and extroversion, particularly for young people. These are traits that positively affect career, marriage, and life expectancy. On the rise, neuroticism, people are more anxious, tense, and emotional. I can vouch for that. I've parents are right along with that, right? We were having that conversation at the table the other day, and the sixth grade teacher turned to me and said, you know, one of the things I've noticed over the past few years, and he noticed all these things, people have become more And I was like, you're exactly right. The author of the article blames it on distraction. He points the finger directly at the digital world. And so the article, it deals largely with the tech exit. There are families who are and counselors who are recommending you just withdraw. And yes, there are apps and like for teams, sports teams, right? Your kid's playing on a travel team, your kid's playing on a summer league. These parents are coming up and saying, that is wonderful. You have an app that you're taking contact with. We have to find another way because we're not going to do that. We've made a conscious choice not to. So let's find another way that we can communicate and get the information back and forth. But one of the things that they found by doing this tech exit or this tech detox is that the kids are bringing back or learning those traits of conscientiousness, agreeableness, and extroversion. One of them even talked about their autistic kid learning to better develop those character traits without having the fix of dopamine that they get from the electronic device in front of them. And it's social media, it's games, it's all kinds of things. So I thought it was an excellent podcast this morning. I was listening to radio. So technically, I guess it's a news podcast. But the article is very, very well done too. And I need to spend more time looking at this this data graph, data picture that the Financial Times put together. I think it's something that I might want to use in a newsletter and reference for parents, just again to start having that conversation and talking to each other or with their kids.
That is interesting. I was also looking up some of the source material as well as listening, and it's interesting. Some of it is behind a paywall. So,
sure, Financial Times, but you can get to the World News Group link, and you can listen to their podcast for free. So you can get a pretty good grasp as to what's going on in the Financial Times article by listening to, and they have a transcript on the website, so you can read and listen at the same time.
All right. Do you do a lot of that? Do you when you hit podcast? So when you hit like a lot of times web pages now will have a read it to me thing. Do you use the listen to this article feature?
I do not. Because I like I know it's reading is a skill that I need to keep up. And if I don't practice it, I won't do it. Now I do this. World News Group also has a print magazine. I don't read that one nearly as much as I listen to their daily news podcast in the morning. And, okay. But here's the thing. That's my news in the morning, right? I get up and I'll say, I'll tell my HomePod. I got two or three HomePods in my house, spread throughout the house. Yeah. You know, when they go cheap, you can get them.
There you go.
Yeah. Just go get them cheap. And then a rumor is that Apple's going to come out with, another HomePod here soon. And as soon as that happens, the current batch is going to go cheap. So guess what?
Sean will buy both.
I know I'm going to get another for my classroom. So I already have. I bought a stereo pair of the little HomePod minis. Oh, man, has that made such a difference in my classroom? People walk in, they're like, "Why does yours sound different than mine?" I don't know.
Does mine sound different? Huh?
How do you mean? I don't know. The wall is white and the HomePods are white. So it takes them a long time to figure out that they're not listening through the Promethean board, which is not stereo. It's all pretty much left channel. So, but yeah, I'll get one of the big old ones, I'll get one of the old big ones and I'll put that in the back and, it won't be part of the stereo pair, but I can play them in synchronous, right? In synchronicity. So I can fill my room with sound. So when the kids are listening to a conversation, the conversation is right, left channel. And then I'll be able to get those nice deep basses. So when I talk about Sibelius's Finlandia and the importance it was on nationalism, they can feel the vibrations of those cellos, the kettle drums, right? And have that added piece that's going to affect them emotionally, responding to what they're learning, not just, you know, listening, right? They're going to get that feel. They're going to get that, what a good audio sounds like. And then, and getting some nice audio that has that spatial aspect to it, you know, put them right in the middle of that orchestra and start have them realize, you know, what sound it could really be like, what harmonies could really be like, you know, what thick chords could really be like, because they're not used to any of that. And my kids in particular, especially the ones that come off just off the plane, they have zero experience with any polyphony at all. So that's way farther off the track than I wanted to go. But yeah, I'm excited.
That's all right. Yeah, yeah. And I think that number one is sound can make a huge difference. And sound is way harder than people realize. To do good sound, to produce good sound, to record, to capture good sound, is way more difficult than people think. And it can have a huge, it can make a big difference. I'm a big believer in installing sound systems in classrooms, because I think one of the other disabilities that a lot of people have is auditory, is hearing disabilities, and they're not always diagnosed. But just if you're in a different part of the room, sometimes you can't really hear everything, and as a learner, you start, you know, filling in the gaps. Well, as a listener, you fill in the gaps, right? Kind of automatically, you try to figure out, make sense of things. And yeah. As a learner, you can be making sense of the wrong way, and that can impact learning that way. But just as the original question was really about, like, if it's normally a text thing, do you listen to it? Or if it's a audio thing, do you read it? And generally, I find that I prefer the original format. If it was originally done in audio, I prefer to listen to it in audio. If it was originally text, I want to read the text, not listen to it, just in general.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Just as a side note, if you guys are looking for an audio system, Lightspeed Red Cats on eBay, going for a really good price. I mean, be careful, because some of them are, you know, $50 for this Red Cat IR Lightspeed Red Cat system. $50 is a good deal. It's $100 to ship it. That's sneaky, dirty pool. So, but there's a lot of good systems online. I've had my Red Cat for 26 years, and it has been a beautiful, reliable system. I love it. It's not going to last me 250 years. But you know what has lasted 250 years?
The United States of America.
Oh, very good answer. Yes. And America 250, the website is up and running. And you can also now get merch, right? So get that shirt, wear it in your classroom. Get that hat, wear it around the school. And get ready to celebrate America 250. I'm sure more will be coming, but the current designs are out there. And so... get ready to celebrate. I might, it's not the sesquicentennial. It's the semi-sesquicentennial or sesquicemi. You know what? That's the next really big long word we're going to have to learn and pronounce for the show.
It's a big word.
Yeah. So, all right. So America 250. We talked earlier about Jack Birkemeyer's pamphlet that got published August 1st. My supply came in time for me to put a few of those out for my seventh grade parents. It's Embracing the Change, Middle School 101 for Parents and Families. Jack did a really, really good job. It's a fold out, right? So it's not like a stapled print. It's one big long sheet. But it folds out, and each section has something different, a different aspect of the middle school experience and a middle school learner. and it's front and back, and it's very, very well done. I highly recommend it. I had a number of parents, seventh grade parents, pick it up and start reading it while their kid was getting their schedule. Then I saw them reading it while they were waiting in for their kid to go through the picture line. And they may have still been reading it down when they're picking up their Chromebooks. That part, I don't know. But I'm going to have a supply of those out for my parents when they come for open house in October. The first run is gone.
Wow, you can, that's good.
Yeah. So they published it August 1st, and the first run has all sold out by August 15th. So in 15 days, they ran their whole supply. That's remarkable. Mm-hmm. And then you can pre-order their second run, their second edition, their second printing. And I imagine they'll run out of that pretty quick too, because this is very, very well done. And it's Jack Birkemeyer.
Yeah.
Yeah. So all good stuff. Check it out. I put a link in the show notes.
You did, yes. And you might want to check out, if you wanted to take some of that information and you're Mac-based, if you wanted to take some of that information and put it into a good outliner, do you use an outliner?
I went and I broke down and I bought OmniGraffle and OmniOutliner.
Okay. So you have a good one.
I like it.
Yeah. And that is definitely a good one. If you did not already buy Omni Outliner, you might want to take a look at Zavala. It is open source. It is, it syncs through iCloud and does a nice job of syncing through iCloud. And it is, it's an outliner. You know, if you're looking to use those, the developer says that originally he was going to develop it as a paid product and realized pretty quickly on that the market for paid products is kind of thin for outliners. But and he also believes in open source, and so he's developing something that he wants and he likes, and it is. It's pretty nice. So you can take a look at that if you're Mac and iOS kind of person. It is free on all of the devices. And that way you could avoid having the blues.
Ooh, and, very good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I imagine Zavala does have some like blue you could put in there, but you jumped back on me here. So Access to Culture Translator has three really good pieces in their newsletter, and I highly recommend going and getting their newsletter and checking it out, because we're not going to put everything in that newsletter in here. But the first one is AI Blues, and what it is, OpenAI has released ChatGPT-5 or GPT-5, and it's a new version of AI that touts better processing, more efficiency, and fewer hallucinations, yet ChatGPT users are not at all happy. And I get what they're, I get why, but I tell you what, I really like ChatGPT-5. But it took away choice. It used to be you had to choose between 4.5, 4.0, 0.3, or some of the other models. And each of the models had their own particular niche ability, right? Now you get, it's 5. And 5 will go to each one. It'll look at what you're doing. It'll say, well, you know, 3 does that best, so I'll use 3 for this. No, 4.5 does this best. I'll go to 4.5 for this. But you don't get to make the choice. ChatGPT-5 makes the choice for you. And that's what people are really upset about. My understanding is that they've gone through and re-enabled some of the choices so you can make your own choices on things. But why people have turned? Well, with this new update, OpenAI consolidated all its models into a single experience, and now just routes the user's request through whatever tool seems best for the job. However, this means users no longer have access to those individual models. By the way, Sora is now also a separate thing. So if you really want good image generation, you got to know that you have to go to Sora as opposed to just using the old DALL-E 3 right within ChatGPT itself. The backlash signals a growing normalization of AI as users now have their own expectations and preferences about the technology. And I think that's an important point. People are using this now as a utility and not as a optional tool for things. You know, Troy, you look like somebody. Yeah, because of
Hazel is sounding the alarm over there, and she is the alarm. So I was muted for a minute there.
And she's worthy of listening to.
Yeah, well, you know.
Yeah, because you know.
And they did turn on the ability to pick four as well.
Yeah, and four is not bad. Three is not, it doesn't do the same things that three does. Three does stuff, it's some stuff that's really, really well. But by the same token, I really do like five. I don't have a problem with five. I've gotten good stuff out of five. I'm not dissatisfied. Matter of fact, I never said, hey, could you just, we use three instead? Right? Three for imaging. But I made some Sora images this week and based off of some of the stuff I pulled out of five. And then I sent it to you and messed with your phone plans, data bandwidth limits, I'm afraid.
That's all right. I'm usually on Wi-Fi, so.
Oh, there you go.
And I have a pretty nice phone plan.
You do.
I will say that I switched to Mint Mobile like over a year ago. And I was a little concerned. Because it's like, is it really as good as they say it is?
Yeah.
It really is as good as they say it is. And it's a whole lot cheaper. I'd save tons of money by switching to Mint Mobile. But they're not a sponsor. We don't sell any ads. But I've been really, really happy with Mint Mobile, I will say. So
I don't think we'd be upset if they were to become a sponsor.
No. But,
yeah. So, hey. You know, Ryan Reynolds, if you're listening to the show, like we know you do, by all means, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Head over to middleschoolmatters.com.
Well, you look like somebody who could strike a pose. You do. You've got that, you know, that scruffy look on the face. And...
No, that is, I will. Why am I forgetting? I will leave that up to Madonna.
Madonna. Okay. All right. Well, I also know that you're a huge Nicki Minaj fan.
Yeah, no.
You know, there are two artists that Troy listens to, Was Not Was and Nicki Minaj. Those are his two.
No. Well, you're half right.
An audience will let you guess which half.
Yeah.
But there's something out there called the Nicki Minaj Stiletto Challenge. Now, Troy would never do this. And it's a TikTok trend where participants balance on one foot in sky-high heels, often on unstable objects like cans or bottles or you know, something like that, and mimicking a pose from Nicki Minaj's 2013 high school music video. Why it's risky? Well, kids are taking and doing this on really risky items. A few seconds of internet fame can cost a lot. One influencer fractured her spine just weeks after giving birth, and Michaela Matthews, star of The Secret Lives of Mormon Wives, faced major backlash after trying the trend blindfolded while holding her newborn. Media outlets estimated that the hashtag Nicki Minaj challenge has racked up more than 1.3 billion views on TikTok with over 130,000 hashtagged videos posted. So this is a trend and you're probably going to see it coming to middle schools near you. You know, if you're in the hospital because you did that, you're going to be in search of all that lost time. Right. And so here's what the phrase in search of lost time means. It's a long form piece in the Free Press that explores why time flies by when we're using social media platforms. Hint, it's not because we're having fun. Has a lot to do with you sit down and you say, hey, I'll just look at a few things on my Facebook, and you start, you know, doom scrolling. Next thing you know, it's 30 minutes or an hour or 2 hours later. So this piece, long form piece from the Free Press, explains why your brain does that and why when you're done, you thought, oh, it's only been a few minutes. Actually, a large chunk of time has passed by, and it's more, kids are more susceptible to it than adults, but adults are extremely susceptible to that as well. So there's a link in the show notes to the Free Press article. So,
okay. Speaking of AI, one of the things that Gemini has from Google is Gems.
Yeah.
And one of those is a new gem called Storybook.
Ooh.
And Larry Ferlauzzo says, this is wonderful with ELs. He says that in seconds, it will create an illustrated storybook about anything you want, pretty much using pretty much any parameters, and includes audio support for the text. So he gave it this prompt: tell a story about Lionel Messi using the verb to be in various tenses. Make it accessible to a beginning English language learner. And he says, here's what it created in seconds. And so then he tried another prompt: explain the women's suffrage movement. And it gives a link to what it created as well. And he says that he uses very little tech in his classroom with English language learners. Having peer tutors read a paper book with student trumps any AI any day. However, this kind of tech, having this kind of tech available to students at home where no one else speaks English is a gift. Speaking of high interest text, students can have the AI create accessible text about any subject it wants. So when we talk about differentiation and supplying things that are high interest and give the student an opportunity to practice, it can be very powerful. So I thought that was a neat, kind of a neat write-up by Larry Ferlauzzo, who, by the way, has retired.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
So here's a thought. This tech is simply personalized Bazel readers.
Right.
Yeah. What a great idea. I love this.
Mm-hmm. It's not going to save the world, but it can help with interest and access. Yeah.
There's a slogan in there. It's not going to save the world. It's going to save your world.
There you go.
There you go. There's the drama. There's a show title in there somewhere.
Yeah.
it's not getting a positive review, folks. It was a mistake. Speaking of mistakes,
I know you enjoy maps, and
I do.
There's a short YouTube video. It's about 5 minutes on the biggest mistakes in map making history.
Oh dear!
And it references Here Be the Dragons.
Ah, yes.
So if you want to know where Here Be the Dragons comes from, you will learn that. But it's also interesting to talk about maps and where maps come from and how maps can be wrong. Because I think a lot of time kids think that maps have to be right. They don't consider that maps could be wrong. And then if you are big, I know that this is a very small audience, small audience niche, but if you write any questions in the GIFT format, there is now a GIFT validator.
Mm-hmm.
Where you can pop them in and make sure that you've got everything correct and take a look at it. It's pretty cool.
I like this. Yeah, because we used to hand check. We used to hand check stuff that AI would send us as output, and then the LMS that we were using
would tell us, yeah, no, this is garbage. I'm not pushing this out as a question. This is great, because now you can throw it in there first and go, oh, it works. Oh. Yes. And you can, question bank it is.
And you can see the, you know, did you get the answer right? Which is one of the things I like. Is you, yes, can check to see, yeah, like, okay, yeah, that's the right answer. Okay, that's the, okay, well, yep, I did that right. There is I'm just going to reference this real quick for you. The Guardian has an article on the shocking rise of online sextortion towards children. I think it's something to be aware of. I found it interesting that Snapchat was the highest noted. I don't know if that's just because they're best at reporting it. Or what, but they're talking about getting 400 cases a week, and they're saying that this is likely an underestimate. Because as we know, a lot of these things frequently don't get reported. But it is something, I think, to be aware of, and somehow to make sure the kids are aware of it and aware that they have options. And, you know, maybe this is the counselor, the social worker, the principals in the building who are addressing this and making sure kids know they have a safe place to go to learn and get support. But I do think this is something that's important as well.
I know somebody who had, so this happened to them when they were a kid, and it, mm-hmm, it messed up his career trajectory. And he's just now getting back into that line of work, more so for his own personal enjoyment as opposed to like line of work. But, yeah, it literally destroyed his career. Now they caught the guy who was doing it to him, and that guy is now serving 35 years or more for what he did, but it took him a long time to catch him. And so he lived in fear for so long. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I thought it was an interesting article. I think it's something that, again, we just need to be aware of and need to help kids through. So, and then I'm also going to point out that there's an article on behavioralism as cognitive science. And this deals with kind of how kids learn. Really what it comes down to is behavioralism and constructivism and how kids learn. And be aware that there are trends towards behavioralism, and they're pitching it as cognitive science and cognitive load theory. And essentially, it would make like tutoring and online things for big tech easier if this was fully accepted and that, because tech can do that. Tech can break things down into small chunks and test you on it. Whereas the constructivism, the project-based learning, the real-world applications, that messiness of education comes into play is, I believe, more effective. Having learned that as a teacher in the classroom and finding out what worked and what didn't work for me. And then finally, there's a little bit of English teacher-y news from you here.
Oh, yeah. If you want to trigger your English teacher, get them ready for the school year. Got that video for you. The Grammarian versus the Errorist. Man, it's a young lady who's got a really good command of the English language, and she's doing a back and forth, and she's got the white hat and the black hat conversation going on. Who's going to win, the Errorist or the Grammarian? Watch the video to find out.
There you go. And to find that video, head over to middleschoolmatters.com, where we have show notes for everything we've talked about and often a little bit more. You get a little bonus if you head over to the show notes. And, of course, we'd love to hear from you. There's a link that you can reach out to us there as well. And we'd love it if you'd go to the podcast catcher of your choice. Give us a 5-star rating. Tell us why Sean is the world's greatest co-show host and all that. There won't be a show next week, but we should be back the week after that, I think.
Yay.
So, you know. Yeah. So with that, this has been Middle School Matters for middle school educators who care. All opinions expressed on this podcast are exclusively the opinions of the host and guests and not indicative of any employer.